extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, presented by AT&T 5G. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Charlie Davies. It's a Thursday, everybody. It's a Thursday after U.S. Open Cup and the Canadian Championship. That means it's a wonderful Thursday in the soccer world, in the greater world. It's pain. It's sorrow. I don't like starting the show this way. I like talking about cats or making fun of Kalen's wood grain or, you know, seeing Dave doubled over in laughter for, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes. I mean, after Tom
Boger's. I thought about that multiple times throughout the rest of the day, and I started laughing again. That was a great moment. I couldn't even tell you what I think is funny about it, but I thought it was so funny.
I watched it back. I know what I think is funny about it, but I don't think it was as funny as you thought it was funny. So what a wonderful moment with Tom Boger, who had he had no idea.
He was professional.
He was very professional. He muscled through it. Anyway, this is a poor transition to how I wanted to start this show. You know, we can't do much about it. There are a lot of things in the world that, you know, we can throw our weight behind and our opinions behind and our money, I guess, and our opinion, you know, whatever it might be, our words. And we could take some action, and I'm happy to say that Los Verdes are taking some action down in Austin. They got a fundraiser going right now for the Robb Elementary School families, the families, 19 of them, even more so when you think about the whole community and, of course, the teachers who were murdered as well, who are victims of that shooting. And it's hard not to think about those things. It's all I've done for the last 3 or 4 days. Every time I try to think about soccer and escape, I'm pulled back to it, pulled back to the human side of our lives and not the sporting side. They've raised more than $150,000. I encourage you to go, if you can, go donate to that. I feel like, you know, we've done this on this show, you know, and that says it all. We've done it multiple times, and I kind of don't have the emotional wherewithal to do it again, other than to just say, I want to pull an Ollie Bedoya and just scream into this microphone. Hey, Congress, do something now. End gun violence. Like, this is, can't live like this. And people aren't living like this elsewhere in the world. So here's hoping that somehow, some way, through whatever means necessary, we find a solution that means that our children, our elders, ourselves are safe when we're in public space. That's about all I got to say on that. So let's talk soccer. Let's dive into our escape. I hope it's an escape for you at home as well. Wherever you're listening to this, that's what this is supposed to be. A place where we yell about, later on, loans for players, whether or not that's good ahead of a World Cup, whether Charlie thinks we're soft. It should be a good time. More coming up today from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. We'll run through all those round of 16 results in the Open Cup. It was an absolute blast on Wednesday night. I did miss the ESPN Plus Football America's whip-around show that wasn't able to go down, but felt like my fingers were on the pulse of where I needed to switch at any given time, and I don't feel like I missed too much. I did miss the Canadian Championship outside of Meyer Bevan's absolute golazo, but I know David Goss, he'll have an update for us on that side. We'll run through the games from the weekend, what you should watch, and why. We have a good conversation about Tati Castellanos and loans that will extend to Georgi Mihailovic and others trying to make World Cup rosters. Talk some more about Leeds and Brendan Aaronson, Jesse Marsh, maybe even Serginho Dest, Tyler Adams, TBD, could be the next full America. Maybe we can come up with a catchy name for Leeds in that sense, and hit a little bit of mail, including somebody in Kansas City who's taking us to task, and including me, for pronunciations and just, basic levels of competency. So stick around for that in the mailbag. Before we go Open Cup and really go deep, Dave, we must start, lest we be accused of bias toward America's hat and our Canadian neighbors in the north. We must start with the Canadian Championship, which Charlie doesn't rate, not for him. Not at all. More of like a mass state championship guy. You know, anything above that border is just irrelevant in soccer terms. To Charlie,
does New Hampshire? New Hampshire doesn't have a Canadian border.
Oh God,
right?
I set myself up for that one. God.
Yeah, that's why he moved to Colorado, to get further away from Canada.
Exactly. You got the nice minty green on right now. Take us through it, Dave. Where do we stand in the Canadian Championship? What were the results? What were the storylines?
We're going into the semifinals now, so you had three teams get a bye to the quarterfinals, Pacific for winning the CPL, and then Toronto and Montreal, who are our finalists in the Canadian Championship last year. It was everything you wanted from this round. Halifax hosting TFC, 6,500 sold out stadium, bumping, smoke, flags, energy, the whole thing. And then a late goal for TFC sort of guts them through it. They brought Jesus Jimenez, Jonathan Osorio, Ayo Akinola all off the bench at halftime. So it showed you sort of Bob was trying to get through it, the level of the game, and then they bring those guys in, and it was an electric second half. So I think that was sort of the moments you wanted. That, I think, is for anyone who didn't watch, doesn't know what's going on north of the border in terms of the club game and the build-out and how much it's growing. We're hearing rumors about a Canadian Women's League as well as NWSL expanding up there. Like, the sport's growing. I've said this a bunch of times. What happened in World Cup qualifying wasn't a coincidence, and it wasn't a flash in the pan. It's the work people have put in, and the game's grown. And so I think that was just a really cool moment for a lot of people. Like Steven Hart, former Canadian national team manager, he's managing that game for Halifax. So they got that win. York got through on the road against Pacific, which was a huge shock. So now they'll face off, York will, against Vancouver. And Vancouver, down that goal, as you said, they get a goal in the 86th minute off a corner kick, which sends them straight to penalty kicks. Cody Cropper makes the huge save because obviously Thomas Asal's still out, and they were able to gut through, and it felt like a big moment. Like Vanni Sartini's running around hugging people after the game, the post-game press conference. You know, he's saying how big a moment it was, how big a win it is, how much it means to them, how much it can mean to the club, chance to qualify for Champions League, to host a final potentially. Like for a team struggling, I think we'll talk about that with the Open Cup, that was a huge moment. I don't think it can be a huge moment if the teams you're playing against aren't built up the way they are. And Cavalry's done one of the best jobs of establishing themselves, taking themselves seriously, building a great home atmosphere. So that was really cool. And then Forge kind of got annihilated in Montreal. Sanusi Ibrahim with the hat trick. That was like the big surprise maybe of the round, but it was awesome. It was, I think we all sort of said it in the meeting about Open Cup. It feels different this year. Obviously, COVID, I think, has affected that of like, finally, fans are back and we can sort of travel and experience these. But I just think the game is growing, and it's growing at the top level, but it's growing alongside that. And for these teams to get to challenge themselves in these big moments are real benchmarks.
Like CCL spot at stake in Canadian Championship as well. Charlie, you know, look, it's well established. I get it. You don't care. Not a thing that you know, you're not devoting energy or effort to it. But I want to know from your perspective, who would you want to see win the Canadian Championship? Just from an MLS side of it, of course, you know, CPL, we're not like trying to slander you here, CPL. I know you want it too. But from an MLS perspective, when it comes to seeing that team in CCL, meaning what it would mean to them in the current state of their season, who would you want to win this?
Given the roster, Montreal Impact.
Just because of CCL implications.
Well, Club de Foot Montreal.
Yes, yes. But we all understood.
I caught it. I just think the momentum that they have with their club, although Georgi Mihailovic could be moving on, it would do wonders for the city and for Canadian soccer in general. Toronto just doesn't seem to have it right now. I know they're getting Insigne in July, but they haven't won since April 16th. This is Toronto. They're supposed to be a powerhouse in the Eastern Conference, let alone Canada. And I just think they have a lot to figure out before they get back to being a force in not only in Canada, but in MLS.
I think it would be cool next year. I think CCL has resonance in Toronto, right? Because of the run and what it means. I think Insigne being able to play in it, Carlos Salcedo potentially going up against a Liga MX team with his background down there. I think it would be cool to put Toronto on that stage, but I agree with Charlie that I think Montreal deserves it. I thought they played really well in the competition this year. I mean, they beat a Liga MX side in the opening round. They were inches from knocking Cruz Azul out as well, who were probably the strongest Liga MX team in the competition this year. So I think both of them do. But when you put them on the field together in a knockout game, it's always going to be great. And that semifinal is going to be awesome.
Yep. Count me in. See, I'll tune in.
So Charlie's in. We got him.
Charlie's more of a semifinal guy. He's like, oh, you know, he's like a lot of these. He's Bruce Arena attitude. He doesn't want to go get whale-hawked. He's not trying to go to Carolina. Like, we're not trying to play at a little field on turf. Like, call me when it feels a little bit more like MLS, right? Like,
Charlie, I'll give you one more pitch. York United are in the other semifinal against Vancouver. Their head coach is Martin Nash, Steve Nash's brother.
Yeah, give me York. And you've said enough. Done. York.
And their star striker is Dwayne De Rosario's son.
Yes. Give me York all day. But
nice.
You're talking about
Charlie and York United.
I thought
baby.
He was in Turkey.
He's part of the six.
You're talking about Canadian Classique. Like, I'm in all day for that. Also, he left. No, he came back to York.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
He was in Ukraine.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I knew it was somewhere in San
He also region. Has multiple sons that play. He's got one who's on the U-20s as well. A goalkeeper.
Wow. In the De Rosario clan? That's an interesting one. All right, Canadian Championship, midweek slate there, excuse me. U.S. Open Cup, round of 16 results. We have our quarterfinal set. There are 8 teams remaining. Got some great matchups in the quarterfinals. About the second week of June, I think, is when those come up. New York Red Bulls, New York City FC.
June 21st and 22nd.
Third,
I already looked to make
sure
I was here.
Third week of June. I was thinking 11th and 12th.
I got you.
There we go.
That's why we're a team.
Yeah, exactly. Red Bulls, New York City in the quarterfinals. Hudson River Derby. That ought to be awesome. After we had a couple in-state rivalries and an in-city rivalry as well in the round of 16. Orlando City move on. They beat Inter Miami. Nashville away. They knocked off late with the comeback. Louisville City. So that was a big one. Louisville had a 1-0 lead, but couldn't hold on. Hany Mukhtar with the late goal. Sporting Kansas City move on against the Dynamo. They will, I believe, host Union Omaha, who are the last USL League One team remaining. Like, this is an amazing run to the quarterfinals for Union Omaha. Two MLS teams they've knocked off now. The Fire, as well as Minnesota, got taken down. A comeback victory for Union Omaha. LA Galaxy and Sacramento Republic in the other one. So that's a good sort of in-state matchup as well. Let's start with the cup sets. Actually, let's start with this. Bruce Arena, as I sort of joked about, he's like, nah, man, come on. Let's play at Yankee Stadium. We don't need to play at Belsen, which can't happen, Dave. We need to be at Belsen. We need to be at Montclair. We need to be in the little band boxes, packed up. Different atmospheres, different feels. It's U.S. Open Cup time. What stadium would you have liked to be at last night? Starfire, Andres says predictably in the comments here. Which stadium would you like? I give you a stipend, and there's a plane ticket, there's a hotel room, and there's, you know, given what we did in Seattle, there's like, you know, $3,000 for you to spend, but 1,500 of it has to be earmarked for beers for other people. Where would you have gone?
So this was actually tough for me because I was accessible to two of the games. And it felt like I wanted to take in all the games rather than go to one. Over the course of the night, I had FOMO. I think it would have been Sacramento. Like, it felt electric. It felt like a game they've been waiting for a while. Obviously, the proximity of the two fan bases, but not El Tráfico, where they will play in MLS. So that, I think, would have been the one that I wish that I had had a magic ticket to go to.
The stand behind one of those goals that looks like it just rises and rises and rises.
I think
and
it's
never
the grandstand is what they call it.
Yeah. I mean, it looks massive. It was packed out in Sacramento. They dominated, I thought, the Quakes. The Quakes were not up to it. I think if I had to choose, I think just because I don't know when I would have been able to get back, probably Louisville, but Montclair looked really special, and as perhaps a future resident of Montclair,
nice.
You know, I think that might have been one for me. But
everyone listening, Friday night, 7 p.m. Birmingham Legion, come on out. Jay Heaps, Tom Sohn, Juan Agudelo. It's gonna be a swag show.
Oh yeah,
whoa,
can't miss that.
Whoa,
that
Swagadello and
I got
Montclair,
you, Charlie.
Gotta be there. Gotta be there. I will throw out being in Minnesota. But being in Minnesota with the Union Omaha people, like Wes Burdine was talking on a Twitter Spaces I was listening to this morning, that like the GM, the coach, the owner, I think, I don't know, of Union Omaha were at the Blackheart afterwards in a very festive mood. I would have loved to be around.
Are you going next round then? That's why I looked it up, because I got to go New York, New York.
Yeah, I
got
to
be there.
I think I'm going to – I went to the Dallas SKC game, but I wasn't able to go last night. That seems like another good opportunity to bring the kid out and see what's up and
get him an owl
set. Yeah, hoot hoot. They know what owls are. Yeah. That's one of the early words for kids. They understand nice. That completely. Charlie, where would you have gone? Where did you want to be?
The same place you guys are.
Charlie's like nowhere in my mansion watching
He's
these
like,
games
drinking
on
a
TV.
Nice glass of red down here in my wood grained office. That's where I want to be with a fire crackling. What a just a beautiful open cup night.
Charlie, let me tell you, because you missed it, the wind at Belson Stadium, there's nothing like it. Did you play there?
Played them at home at Boston College.
Because you were in the Big East when you were at BC.
Freshman year.
Tell us about Belson. ACC. You know, look, Bruce slandered Belson. It wasn't about it. Tell us about Belson from your point of view in just the most romantic way possible.
Intimate.
Who are you talking to?
Yeah, talking to Charlie.
It's an intimate, rough place to play. I mean, if you're playing at home, it's great. I mean, that's why St. John's thrived there. Similar to Revolution playing at Gillette Stadium. Teams don't like to go there. And if you're coming in with that negative mindset and mentality, typically you're not going to get a result. So you're already on the front foot before the game even starts. And you use that to your advantage and you make that your home. You make that your fortress. That's why you typically have the home field advantage when you're playing in some of these places. Teams don't like to go there. If you're telling me I got to go play at Sporting Kansas City, or I got to go play at LAFC, or I have to play at another great place to play, let's say, the Crew, count me in, Cincinnati now. You love playing on the road. You love being in those atmospheres. The fantastic stadium. Those away games, they don't feel, as at least from my point of view, they don't feel... You go in excited. You feel like, oh man, I can't wait to play in these stadiums. I can't wait to play against this home crowd and show and quiet them. So I think for New York City FC, they used Belson Stadium to their advantage and it worked. Although the Revs were in it all the way to the end. I mean that's a
barely, but yeah.
Yeah.
Revs found their feet, they battled back. But like as Charlie said, the stands are directly on the line. It is super windy because it's above a parking garage. So it's like on the
I was just
going to
say,
floor.
Anytime you can play on a field built on top of a parking garage,
yeah,
that's the romantic side of the game. That's the beautiful
Normally,
side of the game.
Normally, if games start a little earlier, normal time, the sun's setting, and it's like an epic spot to be at a game, but it is not an easy place. And I would love to see the locker room set up for the Revs and NYCFC when they play there. Because it is not an impressive professional atmosphere. But that stadium is legendary. I grew up going there, watching college soccer. Chris Wingert, Connor Lade, obviously, some St. John's legends. Shaw Rudy before that. Yeah. Tim Parker, I was actually calling those games.
Oh, okay.
So a little different.
Not as a child.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Let's talk about the cup sets. Let's go. You and Omaha first. Minnesota up 1-0. Didn't have their strongest team out there, but they had a couple DP strikers out there. They lost 2-1. They lost 2-1. The Union Omaha, man, here's the path for them. Des Moines, Minnesota. So going to Iowa, taking on the best that Iowa can offer. The Chicago Fire, Illinois, sit down. Northern Colorado, Hailstorm. The Northern Colorado, you got nothing. Minnesota United, Great Lakes region, out, done. 2 times MLS teams go down to the USL League One champs. They're on a storybook run. The Owls are hooting. They're hollering. They're scoring, half volley goals to win this thing. Adrian Heath is not happy. He called it embarrassing. Said the first goal was comic. It was a goal kick late in the first half with Minnesota up 1-0. I think one flick over the top.
Mm-hmm.
In behind, finish, tie game, all of a sudden, Omaha had belief, and they paid it off.
I ask, where was Tyler Miller? Do we know?
I don't,
was he hurt? Because Eric Dick started, and obviously Dane St. Clair has been the starter. No one else. Okay,
I don't know.
This is a good MLS podcast. Continue.
Yeah, I'm not actually sure. Quote, it's my responsibility to make sure they don't play like that, said Adrian Heath. So that's good to hear. Michael Boxall had this to say. It's just something that top to bottom within the whole club has to go home and take a look in the mirror tonight. A lot of looking in the mirror. Tonight's not reflective of what we want to be as a club. We have a few young guys coming in. We expect them to do better. But we have a 16-man squad tonight with some healthy players sitting in the stands. It could have helped us tonight. 30, 40 minutes isn't going to kill anybody for the weekend. Everyone, top to bottom, needs to have a good look in the mirror. A lot of mirror gazing here going on. If you want to be a professional footballer, if you want to be involved in this club, Oh, then that's far below the standard we want to set.
Embarrassing. Abdominal injury for Tyler Miller, by the way.
There you go. That had to be something, right?
Yeah.
What do you think? Embarrassing? Is that the right adjective for this, Charlie?
At home, yes, it is embarrassing. I think if you're playing at home and you have some of these players who, I mean, who knew? I think his overall salary is more than what Union Omaha plays there. I mean, the complete team. So
their complete team, that's probably their budget for multiple seasons.
Yeah, it is embarrassing.
Multiple seasons. Like, I don't want to. I don't want to talking one or two. I'm saying multiple seasons, probably, because I think he makes like 2.5 or something like that. Yeah,
2.5.
Yeah.
I will say. I will say that I don't want to disrespect Union Omaha because they're balling. They're playing with belief. They're making the most of what they have, and they're playing with a lot of just inspiration. But for Minnesota United, how many times do we have to get after them? What they have, the stadium that they have, the culture that's around the team, the talent that they have within the team, this is below average, and that's putting it politely for Minnesota United. Across the board, no consistency. When you have players just saying, there's just a number of guys who aren't in it, who don't want it. The player selection has been so poor at times. The results, so poor. Up and down, up and down. You have Emmanuel Reynoso, star. We know that. But what have you done to give him a real opportunity to win the league, to win MLS Cup? I get so frustrated when I talk about Minnesota United because they should be winning things. The stadium's incredible. The fans are incredible.
Or barring winning things, competing to win things.
Yeah, but they should be winning things, even past competing. And they're losing to Union Omaha at home.
Can I ask, do you think his comments, Michael Boxall, were pointed at teammates or at management?
Management, 100%.
You don't think he's saying these guys asked not to play?
No, no. This is management. Because even if it were the player saying, I don't want to play, the coaches are playing the players who don't want to play and who have made it known they don't want to play. So it's not on the players. It's on the management. You either pick players who are going to play, you inspire players to play, even though you feel like you shouldn't have to. As a coach, you're a man manager. Each player is different. You have to know how to get the most out of every single player and the collective. That's your responsibility. In some cases, you got to pick the right players and you have to inspire the right players. And then there's the tactics and the philosophy, whether you coach a player, develop a player. We saw what Brian Rodriguez's agent said. You don't come to MLS and develop. You come to play. And if you develop on your own, great. But you're not getting coached to technically develop and tactically develop. Some coaches can do that. Some coaches can't. I will say this comment to me says management is not doing their job and trying to do it in the most PC way, which is like saying players. But Boxall is a professional. He's played with the national team. He's been playing as a pro for a number of years.
He's been at Minnesota since day one.
He could easily go to every single player in the locker room and say, you know, if it is the players, he doesn't have to say it to the press or in the media. And he goes to each player in the locker room and says, get it done. I'm sick of this, or don't show up. And it's those things that you wouldn't see behind the closed door, behind the curtain, is him going to each player being like, got to be better. I'm sick of this. And he has the respect. So this isn't about the players. This is about the management. And I think it's always been about the management. How many times have we seen players falter there? I mean, Dane St. Clair wasn't even starting this year. And he's head and shoulders better above than any goalkeeper there. Not even close. So for me, it's Minnesota United not getting the most out of what they have. And obviously the selection, signing the players that are making boatloads of money and not being used. So it's either you're making bad decisions in the signings, or the signings, you're not getting the most out of them. Either way.
Yeah, to me, if there are players, like you said, Charlie, that are saying, I'm not up for this. I don't want this. you know, that's indicative of like a culture within a club too, right? Like to have guys just be like, ah, no, not for me. But look, let's flip it. You know, we've said our piece on that. Let's flip the Union Omaha, man. This is awesome.
Congrats.
This is awesome. This is so cool. Like to go and this is the dream, man. This is what the competition is supposed to be about. And there have been times in the history of this, especially recent history, where we've been like, man, we need more. And I think to what you said about Canada, Dave, you're starting to see some of that apply in the U.S. Open Cup. And we have seen that apply in the Open Cup as well, of like, it's not just USL championship teams you got to be a little bit worried about. You know, you saw St. Louis SC make a little run. You saw Rochester do their thing. You saw League One teams put the fear of God in some MLS teams. You've seen USL championship teams make runs. And you know, I wish we had more than just one in Sacramento Republic, but you got a great matchup with them against the Galaxy. So the tide feels like it's rising. Do you have any like big takeaways from Omaha, Dave? Anything that you would sort of point out to people? Players, stories, things that are important to you? I mean, clearly winning matters. A culture of winning matters. I mean, they won USL League One, like, and they're able to translate it now.
Yeah, I think ownership groups taking their club seriously, creating an environment players want to come to. At that level, you've seen players give up some money to be in some markets because the fan base, the way the club manages themselves, like players want to be a part of that. Union Omaha is building that. Some of these other clubs are building that. So I think that really matters. I'd also say, I can't remember his name now. The guy who scored the game winner came out of the Revs Academy. I know the starting goalkeeper came through Red Bull too and right to Dream Academy. I still think we will always miss some of the best players in this region because it's so big. And the more good places to play soccer gives players those chances. And I think if you see a team sign a 25-year-old who you haven't seen play in MLS before or a 27-year-old, that doesn't mean that player isn't good. It sometimes means it takes a while for some players to find their feet. Sometimes it takes the right place. I mean, you see some players, I kind of assumed it would always be center forwards converted to center backs. I was watching a game or researching for a game recently, and someone said the starting center forward was a center back converted to center forward. Like, it still doesn't click all the time for people in every spot. And so it's cool to see these players get this opportunity and be in this market. Credit to the Omaha fans. I think just from day one to the atmosphere they helped create brings a club to this level. And they would have played in another championship because of COVID. They won a championship, and now they are into the quarterfinals of the U.S. Open Cup, which is amazing to see. And we saw what it did for FC Cincinnati on their run and maybe the perception of their club around the country. And I think Union Omaha is doing the same thing right now.
I don't know why, but when you said, you know, center backs to strikers and vice versa, I just had the name Aaron Wheeler just flying.
Wheels, baby.
Wheels, wheels, wheels. Shout out Folge on that one. Here's a funny tweet from Evan, SOB Evan. How badly does the Philadelphia Union, Union Omaha, Union Berlin friendly series need to happen? I would add that Union de Santa Fe probably needs an invite there. Union Española out of Chile has a shout to be among that group. I think we're onto something here. A little preseason meeting of all the unions coming together would probably be a really good and fun thing.
I'm down for that.
Yeah, that sounds good. Where do we want to take that? We going to Omaha? We could go to Omaha.
Nah, dude.
Omaha or Berlin? Wait. Which one? Come on.
Don't.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, we're going to Berlin. Let's go.
Taking Union Omaha on the road, baby. I believe it's like I think the Missouri River flows through Omaha. Could be wrong. Geography, Canadian provinces, etc. Not always our biggest thing. But yeah, I think this is going to be a Missouri.
To be clear about the Canadian province thing, this gives me a chance to step back up. We had that conversation. I feel like, one, I nailed a lot of the names. So thank you. Second, I said there is a half time zone. I didn't say Halifax is in that time zone. So to all of you Canadians revoking my temporary Canadian citizenship on Twitter, I got a lot of heat for this. I wasn't saying that Halifax was the half time zone. I was teaching Andrew and Charlie that there is a half time
zone. Welcome back.
You're already toast.
Welcome
you're
back. Toast. You're out. You're out, yeah, you're baby. Out. You're back with us. Out. You're back with us.
You've been outed.
Yeah, but anyway, I think
welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back. What? No, sorry. It's going to be a Missouri River Derby, I believe. Kansas City and Omaha, which is pretty sweet. Kansas City
What's
gets
it like
through
an hour?
No, it's, I think it's two. When we were thinking about going to, we were like, should we go to Springfield, Missouri, or should we go to Omaha? Boy, I really pulled the trigger on the wrong locale there. Sorry again, yeah. Springfield.
You guys know, I've already said I'm a big fan of Omaha. So yeah.
I mean, look, we'll talk about this later.
Let's hope they get to the final, because I want to go to Omaha.
We're going to the final, so we'll talk about that at the end of this conversation. Where do we want to go? Where would be the best final? So
2 hours and 45 minutes is what Google Maps is saying.
Not bad.
Right,
not bad. About the same as Springfield Mall.
At West, that's what? Just like a trip to the grocery store?
Yeah, it's just a trip around the block.
So if Galaxy win, we'd go to LA?
Yeah, wherever it is, we'd go. Yeah. So let's talk Kansas City in the Missouri River Derby that got set up here. Johnny Russell got that dog in him. Johnny Russell is just a fun player to watch, man. And Kansas City are down 1-0. Houston are, I'm not going to say playing them off, but by far the better team early in the game. Johnny Russell gets knocked to the ground. Johnny Russell gets up, and he's just snarling. He's just Johnny. He's the Johnny Russell that got David to say he'd be the MVP of the entire league. Left foot, bang. Daniel Shalley, little dark arts. Not quite. He got fouled, but, you know, Daniel Shalhoub knows how to draw him some contact. They get the PK. Johnny Russell just bangs it home. You know, Peter Vermees is in the most wonderful burgundy suit I've ever seen in my life with, like, the checkerboard tie. Kansas City needs some good vibes. They're fighting. They're clawing tooth and nail. They're through to the quarterfinals, baby.
So I'm going to make a second point and correction after my time zone. I actually feel vindicated in that if Kansas City was going to be in any way successful this year, Johnny Russell would have been MVP, because they are bad and he's still definitely the MVP of the team and he is carrying them to different heights. I don't think it's unreasonable to say they could win this competition with the home atmosphere that they have. As Charlie said, their success there, they've got Union Omaha in the next game and then they're into a semifinal. They are a club that has experience in big knockout games. They are a club that has, I think, an environment and a culture that champions Open Cup, where they've obviously won it before. We've been there for them to win it before. And if they do that, it's just going to be Johnny Russell at this point. Like, it's him dragging them there, and he is good enough to do it. There are not a ton of players in this country that are good enough to do that for their teams. They can play well. Johnny Russell is good enough to overcome whatever it is that they end up facing by himself, and I think that's a credit to him. And as miserable as this season is, that's sort of, I guess, the silver lining of it is like him getting the due and the respect that he has sort of deserved for a while. I will say, Fontes back in the starting lineup, Uri Rossell with Remy Voltaire, Cam Duke in the team as well, not at fullback. I thought it was the most cover they could provide in some of those positions. It still was a little gappy at times, especially in the first half, but they had enough to get over this hump. They beat FC Dallas already in this competition. Like, they beat good teams already. There's obviously every reason to believe they could beat Union Omaha, and then you're in a semifinal.
Semifinal would be against the winner of the Galaxy Sacramento. If that's a big if for MLS teams facing Union Omaha, Sporting Kansas City can get through. Just a little history lesson for those of you who don't know. I don't know if you guys saw the old Maccabi Los Angeles guys that were in LA for that El Trafico US Open Cup match. That was super cool. The record is 5 titles. Bethlehem Steel and Maccabi Los Angeles both have that. And then it's 4. Fire have 4. Fall River Marksmen have 4. Greek American AA, Philadelphia Ukrainians, Seattle Sounders, and Sporting Kansas City. So Sporting Kansas City have an opportunity in this competition to move up into that 5 title range. It's 3 games. Very possible. As you said, we were there, I believe, for their last title when they beat the Red Bulls. Jesse Marsh's Red Bulls, by the way. And I got to dance with Latif Blessing, and it was just an absolute blast. So we'll see how that goes. Here's something that I don't think we've talked about, but we probably should be talking about. Because when Daniel Shalhoub plays, just like Johnny Russell, but in a slightly different way, he's an absolute game changer. He's just extremely hard for defenders to deal with. I think this is the last year of his contract. Charlie,
you should know that because we talked about this on the last show and I brought it up.
Oh my God.
So I said they should trade him and money for Jackson Mendez because he's in his last year.
But I dismissed that because it was so absurd.
Yeah.
Why is it absurd?
That's absurd. They can't lose. They can't lose, shall we?
We have talked about the tanking thing.
I know, but that was like, you know,
next
that was...
year when Alan Pulido is healthy and Gotti Kind is healthy. Would they be better if they had Daniel Shalhoub or Jackson Mendez in their team.
Well, first of all, those first two healthy things are big ifs. Second of all, okay, Daniel Shaw has been a healthy, more productive, better player than either of those two guys in MLS over the last two seasons.
If they're not healthy and they're on this roster, they're not winning.
Why are you on Jackson? Why are you so on Jackson Mendez?
I think it's a fit for both teams. I think. Well, yeah, I love him. He's an Ecuadorian full international going to a World Cup. They have 97 defensive mids. It could be Andres Pereira. I'm not as high on him, but fine. And the other thing is Orlando needs, I think, another option out wide, unless you want Pato to like run your attack for longer. So I thought it was a fit for all teams. That's all.
What would you
do? Weeby didn't even know Shallowy was in the final year of his deal.
Was trying to create a little conversation. Well,
he's going to go to Europe. He's going to go to Europe.
That's the deal? He's going? What would you do if you were Kansas City? What would you do if you're Daniel Shallowy?
Well, there's nothing you can do anymore if you're Kansas City.
Well, you could
right?
offer him a contract, a bigger contract.
The point
right?
is he's now in the space where he can sign a pre-contract, right? Entering this summer window, which means for Kansas City, they should have done their work already. And I think that's something we probably need to dig in on more of like why they haven't. It's dangerous to let a player like this of this quality and this importance get into this situation. My guess is, as you know, from riding the Shallowy train up and down 2 years ago, it wasn't great. That's normally when you make the decision. Last year, it was great. And I wonder if Shallowy said, I'll trust myself then because I'm already coming into my contract year.
Yeah. And then he can get signed and loaned back to MLS.
Charlie just wants to have that one debate.
We'll get there, Charlie. Just FYI, I just looked it up with the MLS players' salaries over at the Players Union. Shallowy's guaranteed comp is in the 500K range. So if you're Daniel Shallowy, you'd be, I would think, asking for a good bit more than that.
He can be a free agent in MLS, right?
Yeah.
He's over 24?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. You know I'm not good on with ages.
Yeah, ages. All right, that's a big win for Sporting Kansas City. They stay alive. They got Union Omaha coming up. We didn't really talk about Sacramento. Should we quickly hit that as well? They won the Hella Cup 2-0. All I have here is it's a pitiful performance from the Quakes. Rodrigo Lopez, awesome to see him score a goal. What, Luis Felipe, I think, is a former Quakes guy. He got a goal from a set piece as well. This was not of the vintage that we've seen from San Jose since Mateus Almeida left. It was a bit of a, it was a stinker. It was a stinker is what it was.
But I'd say credit to Sacramento, who as the home team came out and I thought they were the aggressor and they were up for the game and they've struggled at times in league over the last 2 years. And this was a huge moment for them to step up and play well. And Roro Lopez been around since day one. So he gets the big goal, which is really cool to see. I think this is one of the top two or three games ever for Sacramento Republic, and they were one of the teams that changed the perception. So I think this was really cool for them. They're still battling San Jose on some. Kid Cowell's from Sacramento. His younger brother just played for the Mexico U-15s. He lives in Sacramento still. He trains there. He is not part of the San Jose youth setup. Like, Sacramento's still shot across the bow battling in that area. And I think this was a really big win for them. And obviously the atmosphere was great and it was sort of a tentpole moment.
Let's hit the Galaxy. Why don't we? Let's go El Tráfico. Let's see. LAFC in Carson. Bad news. Bad news for them, at least. 6 wins, 2 draws for the Galaxy in those matches. Some drama in El Tráfico, and Raheem Edwards was at the very center of it. He was calling for it before the game. He was sort of riling up the LAFC folks after coming over from LAFC. Kevin Cabral scores. Looks really good. That's a massive positive for the Galaxy. Samuel Grandsire, I believe he assisted on 2. Chicharito gets 1. Cabral, 2 Grandsire, 2 Chicharito. Dejan Jovetic has the capper. And a post-game scuffle? Raheem Edwards afterwards, quote, "This one was the most heated game for sure, for sure. Well, the ones I've played so far, at least. It's good. I think the rivalry needs this. It's always too nice, I think, in MLS. You see teams in the NBA and stuff like that. You need a little grittiness. You need a little bit of a fight and a little bit of drama. So I thought this was perfect. I get my guys fired up. I also want the drama," he said about his pregame remarks. "I think MLS is a little too soft in terms of players. I think players are too conservative. They don't want to look like the bad guy. I'm not even trying to be the bad guy. I'm just trying to light the fire up between both sides and my players, and I love it, Raheem. Congratulations on getting back in the Canadian national team. Congratulations on embracing the drama and being a little bit of a pot stirrer and then backing it up in the Open Cup. Charlie, this is what we want." This makes our league, the Open Cup, the game. And some people will complain, be like, "Oh, well, this is not about soccer." Well, like, it's a human sport, man. It's about more than just what happens between the lines. This is good.
I want to see more of it. This is the type of stuff I live for as a player. Those rivalries that you keep from season to season, match to match. You look forward to facing Raheem Edwards. You know, there are certain guys that you just look forward to because you knew it was going to be physical. It was going to be chippy. They were going to put a little bit extra in the tackle. You were going to put a little bit extra in the shoulders and the elbows when you're battling for balls. I love that. There needs to be more of it. And then Raheem Edwards all of a sudden he's wearing the Canadian flag too whenever he plays. So when you have that going up against, you know, U.S. men's national team players or players in the pool, that's another added wrinkle to any type of rivalry that he's going to start stoking. So for me, I love it. I think he's growing as a player. The reason why you're starting to see him talk and chirp is because now he's performing. Before, if you're a player and you're not playing, you can't talk. People would just be like, "Shut up, man! You're not playing. Go back and play in the small sided training games when everyone's playing." I like that he's growing. He's playing. He's got confidence, and coming with confidence, now you're starting to see an antagonist as a defender. So he plays that way. It's almost like he plays with a level of arrogance, but you know, it's just him trying to get the most out of this game and him trying to be a mental giant and psych his opponent out. I love those little intricate battles within the game, a game within the game. I lived for those moments. I loved trying to, you know, outsmart, outthink, outplay your opponent. So kudos to Raheem Edwards, and I've loved seeing him grow because now, you know, he's providing opportunities. Yes, he can defend. I think he's always been a good defender. But now you're starting to see something in the attack and transition, being an outlet. And Cabral, you finally saw him open up. You're like, this is the guy they tried to buy. Why aren't you seeing this consistently? What needs to happen? Is it his off-field diet? Is it his training sessions and his habits? What is it? You need to get the best out of Kevin Cabral, because if you do, it's going to open up the game. You're talking about Chicharito being the top scorer and like breaking records, what they thought he would do. He needs players who can do that to create the space, to pull center backs out of position, to pull back lines out of position, to create that space for him. Because if he's 1v1 and someone has a clear view for service, he's going to have an incredible season, but it has to be consistent. And Grandsir, he was making the right passes, the right touches, the right runs. That's a Galaxy team that look fluid in the attack. We haven't seen that often, but when they do have it, man, it looks good.
Greg Vanney had some good quotes on this. Quote, "It's the most complete performance in 2 years since I've been here." He talked about duels. He talked about like competition, playing every play, staying connected as a group, et cetera. Sort of the competition part, the commitment part. But he also talked about the focus, concentration, attention to detail on every play. And he said, we need more of that, that sharpness, that awareness. I think Cabral talked, or maybe his grandson talked about efficiency of understanding, okay, pace of touches, where to go, how to be efficient, how to get the ball in the right position so they can all take advantage of their prodigious gifts. Because they have the gifts. That's what makes it so frustrating, right? They have those things. Dave, what did you see from the Galaxy? And we'll get the LAFC side here because it was an absolute disaster for them. Carlos Vela going off injured. Diego Palacios thankfully walks off, but was part of a scary play with Chicharito. Two huge injuries for them. And they have some other ones as well, plus the loss in El Tráfico and out of the Open Cup. What would you take away if you were a Galaxy supporter or if you were Greg Vanney?
I think similar to what Charlie was saying, I think when you look at that opening goal, you're looking at a Galaxy team that doesn't have to commit huge numbers to score goals if a Grandsir and a Cabral are in form. And that's their best scenario, to then not give up a ton of chances like they did against FC Dallas back the other way. And that's where you see that complete performance. So all of a sudden the attacking guys hit. Now Delgado and Revelison's jobs get easier, and it helps your back line as well. I'd also add, it may be a silly little moment, I thought it was telling how quick and aggressive Mark Delgado was to stand in and protect Chicharito when Murillo came after him after the Diego Palacios push. And it's, this is a quiet guy who in Toronto was 19th on the, I need to lead, I need to push this team. And now, similar to Raheem Edwards, I think Greg Vanney has sold them both on, you can be bigger than what you are, and this is a platform to do it. I thought it was telling that he was the guy who stepped straight in and was like, get out of my guy's face. No fear. Sort of the rest of the team rallies around him from an emotional point of view. And this is for a player who his job was sort of to just make sure the game worked around a Michael Bradley and a Victor Vasquez and a Pasuelo and all those other guys for so long. So I thought it was great on the field. You know, FC Dallas annihilates LA Galaxy. Dallas struggles at times defensively with their fullbacks. And LA Galaxy just could not take advantage of that because they were terrible on the wings. You take this Grandsier and this Cabral and you go back a week, that could be a different result. And Charlie said, you need to see it consistently. Cabral's a young player. I don't know what that answer is. I wonder if part of it was he scores and immediately pulls up the shirt for Sega Koulibaly, who clearly is a mentor for him as an older French-speaking player in that team who's out hurt. Maybe that was the grit and edge that he needed to sort of get that proper performance out of him. And you're just hoping now, can you carry it on? But Chicharito played with fire. Delgado played with fire. And I think it's sort of kind of worked down through the team.
What do you think on the Chicharito, Chiqui Palacios play?
I think it's an unfortunate moment. I don't think Chicharito's being dirty because I don't think he undercuts him. I think he's looking at the ball and he's there. Both players are moving and Palacios comes over him. It was really scary the way Palacios came down. And I don't disagree with Maria. If I was on the field, you better believe I'm going to shove that player as well and get upset. But I thought a yellow card was the right call. And Chicharito, I think his point was like, I got hit. I didn't know what was happening. Right, when he was yelling at the fourth official, he kept pointing at his head saying, like, I got hit from behind. And I think that sort of goes to, like, he wasn't focused on where the body position was of Palacios.
You don't see the glance. Like, I went back and watched that play a couple times. We have Clip Pro, and I was just like,
I don't think he moves that much.
No, it's
like,
not.
He doesn't undercut him.
Yeah, right. He's moving backwards to where he thinks the ball is, sort of chest up, eyes up toward the ball, tracking it, not understanding there's a player coming full speed behind him. That happens, and I agree with you. If I'm Mario, I'm giving him a good shove too, and it's going to pop off. It's a rivalry game, and we saw that happen at the end. But Charlie, we gotta address the unfortunate current run of form for LAFC. Carlos Vela comes up. What, it's 3 losses in 4? I want to say.
Didn't both of you pick them to win Open Cup 2 weeks ago on this show? Anders, can you check the tape? Because I'm pretty sure you asked who would win, and both of them
I had
picked,
you know, just
LAFC
like that,
for the second straight year.
Just like that, so. Shallowy Jakes and Mendez combo.
Yeah.
I'm not even sure this ever happened. Yeah.
You paid Anders enough to burn the tape. Interesting.
Yeah, don't have the tape. Cool. He says. Yeah, just,
congratulations.
That's unfortunate. That's a real bummer.
Good
for
thing I have.
Was looking. You know, sometimes
I have the people with me.
Sometimes the pursuit of truth. Do you? You not the Canadian people. I'll tell you that right now.
They just make me work for their love. That makes me stronger, Weeby.
Okay, that's fair.
No, he just has Red Bulls 2 with him. That's all.
20th minute, Carlos Vela comes out. A little bit of a quad injury, they say. I thought it was, you know, I don't think it's telling about like, oh, dang. What? Come on, Carlos, from the bench. But you could see the level of just like, are you kidding me? From Chirundolo, from Ante Razov, from those assistants of like, man, what else could go wrong? More almost went wrong. Looked like Mahalo Opoku was going to come out right afterwards. He came in, then he went right back down. And then you have Chiqui Palacios come out, who's been one of the most improved players on the season, anywhere in the league, let alone for LAFC. And you're out in Open Cup, despite some quote-unquote experts, Charlie. I don't know who that would be. Definitely not you and me picking them to perhaps win this competition.
I did pick them.
Yeah, I did too.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to own it. I mean, because they're the top of the Western Conference. This is a great opportunity for Steve Cherundolo to claim his first for now. That right now, they're the top of the Western Conference. Great opportunity for Cherundolo to get his first trophy. And I thought he was going to say, you know what? I'm going to play my guys. We're going to push through. We're going to get this U.S. Open Cup. Perfect opportunity. You play Sacramento, and you would have played SKC or Union Omaha. Very winnable games, right to the final. And Galaxy just completely outplayed them from minute one. I just thought LAFC looked tired. They looked sluggish. They looked tired. They weren't first to the ball. Then when Carlos Vela goes out, it was almost like, all right, let's just get through this game. And I don't think it's serious with Carlos Vela either. I don't think it's anything that's going to keep him out for an extended amount of time. But it goes right back to that original conversation of how healthy is Carlos Vela going to be? How often are we going to see this? Is this something that is going to come up every couple months?
Also,
you know, it's disheartening from an LAFC supporter standpoint to say, hey, this is the guy that we're going to stick with, who's supposed to get us an MLS Cup, or our best chance to get an MLS Cup with him on the roster. And he's pulling up with these injuries, and that's a sign of age, but also, you know, maintaining your physical fitness.
I also, so just to be clear, he doesn't have a contract still.
Yeah, no, he mm-hmm. doesn't.
So what if he goes to the doctor today and it says he's out 12 weeks? And that runs through the contract. Like, I know both of you picked them to win the quad the last 2 years, so I know this is a tough time for you.
More of a sextuple guy, I feel like.
Got it.
How many?
Because you were counting both Charleston preseason tournament as well as
the battery cup.
As Las Vegas Lights. But I just, nothing about this has been straightforward. Nothing about this has been simple. And there's a real question what the future of this club is. And I think the longer you wait, the harder it is. I think if he's secure on a contract and hurt, you're better off than the unknown that's happening to you as a club. And I think a lot of the fans feel the same way. It's frustrating. I think it's hard. And I think he's frustrated by it. We know he is. And we know the coaching staff is as well. And
that's what I read in the whole coaching staff reaction of like, God, man, it can't be straightforward. Like, are you kidding me again? And not bad on Carlos, just on like, if every domino keeps falling on us and in the worst possible timing.
Yeah. And the one thing I would say is I think they made a lot of great moves this offseason. Ilya Sanchez, there's a reason he's not still in Kansas City. Franco Escobar's been out the last few years for Atlanta. He's out again. Like, there are still a ton of question marks about what roster you're going to get week in and week out for LAFC. Hence why I picked Philly to win the Supporter Shield last week. But, you know, that doesn't look good for me.
That was not last week. That was Monday, buddy.
The quad.
All right. All right. Let's go to Florida real quick. Florida is purple confirmed. A couple late goals.
Anders, you want to put a timestamp on this so you can come back to it? Just,
yeah.
I got
some. Just cut that audio, Anders. Just erase it from the sands of time.
Can I pitch you guys on the name for this rivalry?
Yeah, yeah. I want to hear that.
So we had Franco Panizo on MLS today on Thursday. So you can go back and listen to that. Search MLS Today on any of your podcast apps or on Spotify. You can listen to the show on demand. Join me live every day at 11 a.m. Eastern time. We'll have a ton of national team coverage the next few weeks. Our weekend preview.
Ooh, now I got that plug in. That was a Kalen Carr-esque pitch right there.
Thank you. So we had Franco Panizo on, and he said, one, it has to be something that works in both English and Spanish because of the nature of the region and because of a large amount of the fan base and the supporters and all of that. So he said the Sun Clásico, a.k.a. the Clásico del Sol.
I like it. I was thinking Copa del Sol.
I used to work Franco in Call of Duty, just so you know. Absolutely worked him.
Oh boy!
I did not know where that was going. Wow!
But yeah, I'm down with that name.
Doing the whole like the whole crouching on top of him after you kill him sort of thing, or
yeah, a lot of claymores. Yeah, took him out.
Okay, so we're in on Clásico del Sol, right?
Yes, I'm 100%. I'm also in on the end of this game. I think it was after Hany Mukhtar scored to send Nashville through. I immediately switched over, and boom. John Mota scores, and you're like, okay, well, Inter Miami's going to do this. Boom, Facundo Torres comes back. Dramatics, I switch over. I let it go through extra time. Come back for the PK shootout. Dang, Bryce Duke and DeAndre Yedlin with just doo-doo PKs. Just bad, bad, bad PKs. Bryce Duke's just especially lacking conviction of any kind, and DeAndre Yedlin doing an Eddie Johnson, lifting up, hitting into the Nowheresville. But I got to say, Orlando have never lost a PK shootout, so it felt a little bit like fate. But Orlando move on. Nashville move on. They will match up. Ake Loba goal. We don't even have time to really talk about the Ake Loba goal, but he scored one, his second all time in MLS. But really, this game was about, I think, the play by Hundwalla Bawana is sort of the play of the game. To understand that he's not the main man, to pause on the edge of the box in the 88th minute, to let Hani Mukhtar curl his run around him, play a simple ball, and Hani scores it. What?
Nothing.
Yeah,
I'm with you, Goss. And Anders can attest, who has sat in the front seat of the Hundwalla Bawana train, he missed literally the same opportunity like 5 minutes before, and then Hani Mukhtar does everything on that goal.
Yeah, I know. So, that's what I'm saying. Hundwalla realized, it ain't me. I'm not that dude.
You're supposed to make. That's great.
Yeah.
I thought Hani Mukhtar was great. Ake Loba had two turns in this game that opened the complete game up. If he had teammates around him that were capable of finishing, it was the best performance he's ever had. Keep the roll going, Ake Loba. And congrats to Nashville, because I think this is a run that can matter for them. Like, they don't host next game, but if they host a semifinal or a final at Geodis Park year one, that's mission accomplished.
Sick. We could go to Nashville. We're going to the Hudson River Derby in the quarterfinals. Bruce Arena is hoping that this one gets played at an MLS stadium, of course. But Red Bulls can count that, I think, as a home win at Montclair. I think that counts for them. You know, not full, maybe like a half home win. But it's something. It might light the fire for going back to Red Bull Arena. But they move on. Let's end this here with where we want to go. What we think the final is going to be. Play it out. The bracket.
Wait,
here.
Can we just add in real quick? One, Gerhard Struber's comments postgame are great. They always are. And two, Patrick Lamala said I could still play myself into the Poland World Cup team. So fingers crossed that Poland could still start five MLS players in the World Cup, especially in their attack.
Also, a bummer for Andrew Farrell, who, he got Tati. That's what Tati does. He catches you in moments where you have a little bit of a rough touch. Got the ball, got it across to Santa Rodriguez in extra time. New York City FC move on because of that.
He got it across to Eber, who got it to Santa Rodriguez, told me. I'm having a show. Anders, we got to get a document going.
Oh, my God.
We got to take him off that perch.
I gotta look for my. I'll look for you. I'm gonna tee you up here in a little bit on a certain conversation. Yes, all right, where do we want to go for the final? Where do we want to go? You have. I guess you don't have eight choices. You can, unless you're saying Yankee Stadium or New Jersey. Where do you want to go? Can go to Kansas Nashville. City.
Give me Nashville.
Give me why Nashville?
A beautiful brand new stadium, and the city is incredible. So I want to experience that. I haven't been there since 2007. Actually 2008, we had Olympic qualifying in Nashville, and I was like, this city's cool. So I want to live it. I want to see them in a final. That would be pretty special. And if it's not there, let's go to Omaha. I've never been to Omaha. It would probably be the only time that I would ever go to Omaha. So
yeah,
I'm in for those two.
Wow.
I'm all in for Omaha. I don't know if they can host that home
with the
dimensions. So I hope they host at Morrison Stadium, which is Creighton's soccer stadium, which holds like 4 or 5K and is like a perfect soccer stadium. And I agree with Charlie. I've been to Omaha. I'm obviously a huge fan. But when else am I going to get to go for a final or a soccer game?
I would throw out Sacramento as a cool one, just to have it at a lower division, non-MLS stadium, to have that MLS or non-MLS winner. First time since the Rochester Rhinos way back. Now, like more than a decade. We might be at 2 decades at this point. It's even more, right? It's at like 26 years, year before MLS started, I want to say. I don't know. It's been a long time.
No,
I think
Rochester
Sacramento would be
cool.
Rochester
won in 90. I thought they won after MLS came.
I don't know. Facts have not been
our strong point. Oh, not again, Goss.
Yeah, facts have not been our strong point. By the way, Daniel Shalvey is 25. So he is technically older than 24. Just so we have that on the record. All right, let's get in some other stuff and get through the rest of this show here. U.S. M&T roster's out. We discussed that, but Brennan Aaronson to Leeds is official. Let's see.
Rochester won it in 1999, the exact year I said it, at Crew Stadium over the Rapids.
Nice. We have one from Sergeant Pickles here, which still makes me laugh. Got any takes on the small possibility that Aaronson, Dest, and Adams could all end up at Leeds with Jesse Marsh? What do you think about that, Charlie? Would that be good for Serginho Dest and Tyler Adams? Would be good for Leeds, I would think.
I don't think it'll happen because it's too risky to get so many Americans on the same club and the investment that the pressure won't be fair. It'll be so harsh. They'll be ultra critical. I mean, Brandon Aaronson already is putting himself in a position because of the transfer fee they paid and the expectations and the results that they're going to expect from him from day one. This isn't let's ease you in 6 months. You, in the Premier League, it's match one. Match day one, you have to deliver. Because if you have to battle relegation throughout the whole season, it's maybe one match. You get an opportunity for one match and it's the next guy's turn. You know, it's that type of pressure. So I don't see that happening unless, you know, they progress from this year and they get another season. And then Jesse Marsh, one, proved that he's making the right signings and he's going to develop the players that he's signing and they're performing. Then you get a little bit more faith from the ownership. They give you a little bit more money. And the fans and the supporters believe in you and they trust in you. So then you could see him bring in 2-3 Americans and no one's going to say anything. I think right now, probably not going to happen.
All right, let's get to the conversation here. From Dan, hey guys, great show. I'm an NYCFC fan who's hoping that the team somehow keeps Tati Castellanos around for the rest of the season. Could you envision a scenario where NYCFC reaches a summer deal where the purchasing team pays $1 million or $2 million less than the asking price in exchange for delaying the transfer, letting him finish the season here and going for one more run at MLS Cup? Is that a possibility or is it just not how things are done in these types of sales?
I'm going to say no.
Yeah,
They've already won MLS Cup.
Yeah, I don't think so either because I don't think Tati's not going to want that. It seems to me like he's looking for his next step, whether that be God rinse and repeat River Plate and Marcelo Gallardo, or as we're now hearing some conversations, some chatter around him, maybe West Ham. But Tom Bogert says, I think there have been conversations, but there hasn't been an official bid and certainly not one at the quote unquote $16 million price that NYCFC seemed to be setting out there for Tati. So I don't think so. But we had a rip roiling discussion about loans and maybe sales. Prior to this show and our pre-meeting, centered around Georgi Mihailovic, Charlie, or Dave, who wants to start here? Raise your hand, hit the bell, ding, ding, ding. Whether Georgi would be better off staying in MLS with Montreal to make the World Cup roster or moving overseas in the summer if and when, you know, possibly this transfer arises at that time. Which would be better for the USMNT and what would it say about Georgi regardless of the scenario?
Am I going first, Charlie?
I don't know. Take your space, man.
I thought Charlie hit the buzzer. So my point was, I think I've made this point on this show a couple times, and it's not the same for everyone. For the most part, if you want to be a part of this World Cup roster, you need to be playing and you need to be informed. We have passed the point of, well, I'll make the World Cup roster because I play for this club in X league. We are in a spot where that's 4 games that's going to change. Like you've ran that opportunity out. And now if I'm one of these players, I'm looking at myself and saying, like Charlie said, I need to hit day one. It all needs to work. Okay. I come into a club. I'm new. I don't speak the language. I don't know the coach. I don't know my teammates. Let's say they start me slow. They want to get my feet wet so that what happened to Ricardo Pepi doesn't happen to me. Now it's September 20th for a November World Cup. And I haven't started a game. And I go from MVP front runner in Major League Soccer to I come off the bench and I try and make an impact at Bologna. Even if it's 3 games that you don't start out the gates because you're not ready yet or you're hurt at some point, right? And you're hurt. Now you've missed some of preseason. You don't know the team. So now they're going to bring you back slowly. Now it's September and you haven't started a game in 3 months. And you've gone from an MVP leader, a leader of a team, scoring goals, creating chances to I'm a fringe player at my team, and I already was trying to get into the U.S. men's national team. I think it makes sense for Georgi. I think Gaga Slonina, we already know, will come back. He'll be on loan. We've seen what's happened with Richie Larea and his situation. Tejan's been a little bit different in his success in Belgium. It's obviously a different level as well. That was my argument, and my argument was if I'm an MLS player and if I'm an MLS club, I think that's your ideal move at this point in the 2022 calendar.
There was some truth in there. There's some good things that you said. But if you're in the U.S. men's national team setup and you're in a position that is loaded, like Georgi Mihailovic, the only way.
Hold on, time out. Can I just ask, what position do you think that is? Is it on the wing or
who
is
cares?
I think either, it matters. I think or. It matters between wing and eight. I do think it matters.
It doesn't because they're both loaded, so it really doesn't matter. You have Christian Pulisic, Gio Reyna, Brendan Aaronson, Tim Weah. Just already, you're not playing.
Paul Areola, who I know people will get mad at me for saying that, but right. is right. in great but form and Berhalter trusts okay. and has been a pretty darn effective player. Great fifth option.
And in the midfield, you have Tyler Adams, Weston
McKennie. Who he would not be competing with. So let's just talk right. eight.
It's just they're all midfielders, though.
Okay.
Yunus Musa, Kellen Acosta. And then you could throw in Gio Reyna in there. The only way that Georgi Mihailovic will vault himself up this ladder is with a move to Europe. And as if there's ever a time to make that move, it would be now because he's playing with the utmost confidence. He is fit and he'd be getting a full preseason. You have to factor in all of those. And then he would get an opportunity because whoever's paying for him is getting him in preseason. And they're obviously trusting him to be the future, the answer. And they're going to give him opportunities to play. Now it's on him to make the most of those opportunities to get a chance to play and develop. And that's why you go to Europe, to be uncomfortable, to develop. Now, it doesn't work for every player, like you said, Goss, and it's very player specific. For instance, Matt Turner, another great one. Star in MLS. Absolute star. Going to Arsenal. Now you're going to be the number two. That's without a doubt. Ramsdale's the one, you're the two. You're not going to play. But the only way that he's going to start for the national team is by going to England.
So I do, but goalkeeper's a different conversation.
Okay.
Because he's not going to get 20 minutes at the end of a game to prove that he can play.
Can I finish? It's just the point that you need to go over to test yourself. Okay. Guys that it's worked for. Brendan Aaronson. Would he be on the national team if he didn't go over to Salzburg? Salzburg is the Austrian league is not better than Major League Soccer. Everyone knows yep. that. You're yep. not going to Salzburg for the competition with the Austrian within the Austrian league. You're going to one, put yourself in the European shop window, but two, you're playing against European competition in Champions League, in Europa League. That's why you go. And at the same time, you're getting used to the dynamics of playing in Europe, learning a new language, the culture, having to be by yourself, all of those things play into becoming
Charlie,
a better player.
That was 2 years ago that Brendan Aaronson went.
Okay.
He also spent the entire season with the Union.
Okay. But yeah,
so he didn't
not
have preseason.
Relevant.
So he didn't have, I'm just saying he did not have that preseason.
Right.
And he went to a club that had a coach that trusted mm-hmm. him so completely that is now, you know, not exclusively, but part of bringing in the 30 mil to Leeds.
But all of that is fine. The point, Charlie, is it is May 26th of 2022. Yes. Georgi Mihailovic is not going to learn Austrian or German, and change his life in the next 3 months.
He's going to change his mentality and training. I promise you that. I promise you that.
So six weeks of training is better than being the MVP and a leader of a team week in and week out in that same time period. And I'm not talking about career. I'm talking about putting them on the World Cup roster this year.
You have to think long term. You're not thinking short term. Your career is over the course of 10, 12, 15 years, whatever it is. You think about what's going to get you to maximize your potential. The sooner you go to a place that's going to give you a good opportunity, if Georgi Mihailovic was getting signed by Chelsea or he's getting signed by Barcelona or Madrid or Milan, just for example, going to those clubs is not going to help him because he's not going to play. But if you're talking about like a Tejan Buchan, you're going to Club Bruges and you're going to play every game, that's the difference. So it also depends on what club he's going to. If he's going to a club he's not going to play, then it makes no sense. Or maybe it's the I'll sign and your favorite getting loaned back to finish the season. Sure, that works. But ultimately, you want your national team players, you want them going over to play with the best, to get tested. That's why you go to Europe. You're going to try and get a handsome contract and get paid. Not that you can't get paid in MLS, but you're going to get more money typically in Europe. And two, you're going to get tested by the playing against the best players from week to week in training every day and then the competition. That's why you go, because you're not getting that in MLS. You're not getting tested week, day to day in training like you are in Europe. That's why you go.
But I don't disagree with you from a career standpoint. And Georgie at 25, 26, okay, fine. Maybe this is your one shot at it. But you said, when we were arguing this before, you said, if I'm the national team manager, how can I trust this player's desire and ability to be the best player on my national team if they're not willing to go? And I think that's wrong.
No, it's the, if you have the chance to go and it makes sense, but you doubt yourself, if you're a player that's going to say, oh, okay, it's the right move, the right club, but I don't know if I can play from the very beginning. I'm going to make sure I play. I'm going to go over there and give it my best, and I believe in myself, and I'm going to go and play. You want that player? If I'm a head coach, I want that player rather than, no, I'd rather just stay here and I'm comfortable and I'm going to play every game.
But that's not what we're talking about, right? We're talking about a potential sale that's sealed. So he's saying, I can do it, I'm going to go. And a loan back because, one, Montreal might want it, and two, and this is really what it boils down to, Greg Berhalter might say, and he said recently that form really is going to matter a lot.
Thank you.
That he thinks that the form is going to be better in that sense. Now, I just was taking it does depend on destination. Let's say he goes to Bologna. That would not be a new situation for Georgi Mihailovic. Georgi Mihailovic has trained there. He understands whether or not he fits into, at least in not now, like literally yesterday, whether he fits into that squad. If you look at the goal scoring that they have, and that's sort of the new skill that he's debuting as sort of a late arriving midfielder, out of Marko Arnautović, they don't really have much. So maybe he fits in. Maybe he already knows. Maybe he's been in contact with the coach. I don't know if it's the same one because he went and trained with them. Is not massive, but
he went and trained with them this offseason. So he has that relationship. But Charlie, my thing is, okay, so two things. One, it'll take you time to get into that team. How much time do you have right now? And two,
well, you have a full preseason, so you have a great deal of time to get into the team.
You have a full preseason to win your spot, because after a month, decision for Greg Berhalter has to be met, and you're supposed to be at top form at that point. Like Georgi Mihailovic's best chance of getting in, the same chance that Jeremy Obobese and Jesus Ferreira and all these guys have, is my form is better than a guy who plays in a so-called tougher situation.
And what did that form get Brandon Vasquez and Jeremy Obobese in camp? Did that form get them even into a camp? No.
But they
because it has
different
to be
situation. Georgi has
Charlie's
part of
right,
group
but
from the start.
No, don't Georgi's form situation.
Obobese, you're right, but Vasquez,
I'm telling you, at the end of the day, you need form, and it's also a look at where you're playing. If you're playing every damn day in Belgium, or a team that's in the top division, Austria, wherever, and you're playing and you're in form versus you're playing and you're in form in MLS, you're going to take the guy who's in form in Europe. It's that simple.
But
if Jeremy Obobese had the same output right now and he's in Europe, he's in camp right now. There's not even a question. Go ahead.
Walker Zimmerman, Miles Robinson, and Aaron Long are the three starters at center back, and Matt Miazga is not.
Center
and
back.
He tried. John Brooks is not.
Mark,
and he's
Mark McKenzie's a better example there.
Great. Like, we're talking about center back. It's a completely different conversation. And we're talking about players who have been in camp. John Anthony Brooks has been in camp. And he's been whack. That's why
Walker
he's not
Zimmerman
in.
Got dropped from the team and got brought back in. And the only reason he gets
because
brought back in
injuries.
Is but
because
he's also playing week to week for Nashville. He's the starter week to week.
Great. Because he's doing well. And everyone else around him is not. So then he gets his opportunity, and he proved it with the national team. He was on the outskirts. He had been playing the same way in MLS for 3 years or so. Nothing changed. The only thing that changed was his competition at the center back spot for the U.S. men's national team. That's why he got the opportunity. That's the only reason he got the opportunity. And when he did get it, he took it. But he was player 6, 7, 8. Greg Berhalter didn't value him like he does now. Not at all. But it wasn't until he got national team caps and had the same type of performances that you can say, it doesn't matter where you play. As long as you're playing, it doesn't matter when you play. But if you're not there yet, if you're not on the level of Christian Pulisic and Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie and certain players like that.
Or DeAndre. I'm going to throw DeAndre Yedlin as an example here. I went the opposite way and has integrated himself more into the team since.
If you don't have that, you need to go somewhere else to level up, essentially.
Do you think Georgie will be on? Do you think he realistically has a chance to make this World Cup team, Charlie?
I do realistically think he has a chance, for sure. But I think he needs to do a little bit more. Like, what he's doing now, as great as he is in Montreal, that's not going to be enough.
His best chance of earning a spot happens in the next 3 weeks with the U.S. than anything that happens in his club situation. If he comes and plays well in this window and he plays well in this group, now he is someone who's defending his spot versus trying to fight for a spot. And now you have to question moving. Now, from Charlie's original point, your career is your career. It's not just about going to one World Cup. Richie Larea made the move because it was his chance at this age. He had to. Fine. Do it. Sam Arcube is moving. We see Kyle Larin choosing to stay. People are making these decisions. It shouldn't just have to do with the World Cup. But there is a cohort of players who have three more coming. Brendan Aaronson's in that conversation where it's different because he will be around. That's guaranteed. For Georgie, you're 25. Like, this could be your only shot at a World Cup. That's a special situation. I'm not saying you have to do it.
An only shot at Europe.
Could be true, too. Although DeAndre Yedlin played in a World Cup, and then he got his move to Europe because it is a showpiece and a platform.
How old was he when he made that move?
2021. Yeah. No, yeah. Definitely it's younger.
Georgie's 23, by the way, because age is a thing we should.
Oh, my God. He's 23.
He's a very young 23, too. He won't be 24 until November 10th.
So. All I know is I feel much better now.
Feel good?
I feel much better because he worked me up before this.
Yeah, I thought you really kept some of your pre-show emotions in check. Hey, just a quick one for you. Week 14, folks. Saturday, national TV, LAFC hosting San Jose on Unimas Tudian and Twitter at 6 p.m. Eastern. Both those teams just knocked out in the Open Cup. We'll see what kind of lineup Steve Trundolo Fields and whether San Jose can bounce back. Sunday, national TV, this is a big one. Also on Unimas Tudian and Twitter, English audio in LA. The Galaxy coming off this sail-filling win in El Tráfico in the Open Cup onto the quarterfinals. But Austin is coming to town. We'll see if Austin on the road against a team that's resurgent, but maybe
the Gigantes.
You know, yeah, maybe a little bit. Well, they haven't been Gigantes for a while. They're trying to get back to Gigantes status. Maybe
who
a little
hasn't?
Bit. What?
Austin FC?
No, LA. Oh, I thought you were talking about the Galaxy as Gigantes.
No, I was saying Austin FC. I was trolling you.
Oh, no, you were trolling me. I missed it. Me and Austin supporters, we're on a good level right now. We're feeling good about each other, okay? We'll see if Austin can keep getting results, do it on the road. This tough stretch of games continues for them. And then the nightcap is Seattle-Charlotte on FS1 at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. So we'll see if Seattle can get it rolling at home after losing last week. And Charlotte, yeah, they're above the playoff line right now. I picked them to drop below it. We'll see if that happens for them.
Wait, are we doing MLS After Dark before Seattle Charlotte?
Are we? I don't know. What are we doing? What should we do? What do you think? Probably after, right?
Yeah.
Or...
yeah. I mean, for sure after.
Yeah, it feels silly to do After Dark like before it gets dark and before the games are over.
So 11:30.
Yeah. Good reminder for people out there. The MLS After Dark shows on Twitter Spaces also go on the MLS Today podcast channel as well as MLS Today and the Power Rankings show.
I'll be on with Kalen Saturday night.
Nice.
So as you consume all the games,
it's not as good as Sunday
out.
Night, but you can.
Yeah,
you can
Sunday.
You can still listen.
Look, if you guys look, if you want to go, if you went to Europe, you might be. Charlie went to Europe. You might be good enough. I went on vacation to Europe. I've been on vacation. So
yeah, but I got loaned back. That's true.
Well, I don't think it's a loan. That was a permanent move, Charlie.
No, I got loaned back.
Well, that's true. Then it became permanent. Either way, ESPN Plus, some great games there as well. In the mailbag, 412-060 MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. Travis in Omaha, what is more likely to be true based on team performance in 2022? Seattle is the best club team in CONCACAF or Omaha is the eighth best team in the United States? They're loving this in Omaha, huh?
Yeah, good. They
embrace
should.
It. Yeah, take it while you can.
We had another one from Scott.
Seattle thing, by the way, is the one, though, unfortunately.
Yeah, yes. Scott Chupak said, what would it mean for MLS to win Champions League in 2022 but lose the Open Cup?
I think it's actually a positive. I think it's showing that it's not. We had this conversation around TFC, right? When you went down to Mexico, it was like, well, Javinko's good enough. This is unique, though. This isn't American soccer, Canadian soccer, or MLS. I think that would show you, one, that there are more teams that can compete at a high level, and that the pyramid is growing, and that the ground floor, the base is strong, but and then also the top is higher. So I think it would be a really positive thing if that was the case.
Matt in Fort Worth, I love the idea of the Open Cup, but I won't start paying attention until they make the competition fair. For example, home away matches or draw goes to the away team. A couple of weeks ago, Weeby mentioned that Sporting KC was 5-0 against FC Dallas in the Open Cup. He failed to mention all five games were played in Kansas City. I'll watch my team play anytime they take the field, but I certainly won't be watching any other Open Cup games because I'm just not interested in an unfair competition. What do you think about that, Div?
I can understand the complaint, but it's a blind draw. I don't know how that happens, but I guess it does. But how much fairer can you make it besides having a blind draw?
Yeah, I do think that this year was a big improvement in the terms of entering MLS teams earlier in the competition, which gave us a lot of those MLS, non-MLS matchups early on. And for me, one of the very real complaints about the Open Cup is that we don't get enough of those. The whole point is that it's open. Like, I don't want a competition where you get down to the nitty-gritty of it, and then it's a bunch of MLS teams flooding in at once to face each other. Like, that devalues it. So I think the Open Cup got that part of it right. But I would like to see MLS teams come in even earlier. And be forced to go on the road. And then, yeah, I mean, it is a blind draw. So, like, I guess that's the odds on five straight in Kansas City are what? Not
Anders is weighing in, and I can't say I know exactly each matchup what year. There has been times where the team that was willing to host could pay to host, and some teams weren't. But if that was the case, that would be on FC Dallas.
Yeah.
So, like, you can't complain as a fan if your club's not willing to do that. And I don't know that that's the case with these specific situations. I think the
also Dallas, forced to travel thing in Kansas City. So
yeah, I think the forced to travel thing is interesting because it takes away the randomness. It adds in the one element that we want, but does it make it actually competitively fair? It's an interesting conversation.
David and KC finishes it off here. I just finished listening to the Superlatives pod, and again, you guys are unable to pronounce names. Marinos Jonis is Jonis, not Zionis. Cam Duke played on the left. Russell played central. Walter played on the right. I know Sporting isn't good, but I'm asking for the basic levels of competency from you. Thanks. Ooh. P.S. Weeby do better. P.P.S. Rock Chalk. So he's asking for more from me, and I appreciate that, but I don't think I had any comments on the positionality of Kansas City's attack in that particular podcast. So I did probably say Jonis wrong, but I now have the correct pronunciation from you, David and KC. So I appreciate you and love you, and that's it for us. Go check out the Los Verdes fundraiser. I think it's if you have the means, if you have the wherewithal, you know, help them out or donate to whatever you see fit as it pertains to that particular situation. And we are out of here. We will see you on Monday, everybody. Actually, no, we won't. Good note. Tuesday. We'll see you on Tuesday because of Memorial Day. So until then, adios.